भायं प्रमाथस्य वनेष्वपि स्याद् यथा स आस्ते सह सत्सपत्ना चिथेन्द्रियस्यात्मरथेर्बुधस्य गृहाश्रम किन्दु करोत्यवद्यम्। Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he is living with his six co-wives, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses. Even householder life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied learned man who has conquered his senses. Śrīla Narottam Das Thakur, his son. Grihe va vaneti thake, hagoranga vale thake. So whether one is living in the forest, or whether one is living at home with family, if one is engaged in the process of bhakti, in the devotional service of the Lord, he is a liberated person. Similarly, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Grihe tako vane tako, sada hari pole tako, sukhe dukhe bulo nako, Varne Hari Naam Koro Re. That whether one is living in the forest as a sannyasi, or whether one is living in home with children, wife, worldly responsibilities such as a job, if one is taking shelter of the holy name of Lord Hari, there essentially is no difference. We are reading today a beautiful story which illustrates this essential Vedic truth. This verse is being spoken of by Lord Brahma, who is one of the 12 Mahajans. Now, of the 12 Mahajans, we find many of them are renunciates. Shukadev Goswami, Narada Muni. They never married. They were sannyasis who simply traveled from place to place, spreading the message of the Absolute Truth. But of the Mahajans, we also find Brahma, Shiva, Bali Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu. They were married men. They carried out their responsibilities. Some of them were kings. But they are all equally considered supreme authorities on the conclusions of all religious principles. Now, we find Priyavrat. He was one of the two sons of Maharaj Uttanapada. One of the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu had an eldest son named Priyavrat and a younger son named Uttanapada. Now, from very childhood, Priyavrat had no inclination to materialistic things. He had no inclination to live in a home. He had no inclination to have a wife or children. He simply wanted to completely focus his mind on Krishna. So he requested of his father, give the kingdom to my younger brother. I'm going to the Gandabhandana mountain And there I'm simply going to live in the ashram of Narada Muni and just do tapasya. So he left, and Uttanapada became king. Uttanapada had two children. One was named Uttam, and the other was named Dhruva. Ultimately, Dhruva Maharaj, like his father, he was a perfectly self-realized soul, a great devotee of the Lord. Dhruva became king. But first, as you know the story, he went to the forest and performed tapasya and had the wonderful vision, the darshan, of Lord Narayan. And he went to the forest originally because he wanted a kingdom greater than his father's, because he had been insulted by his father. But after he saw the beautiful form of Lord Vishnu, Vishnu said, "What benediction would you like? You want kingdom greater than your father's? I will give it." He said, "No, I do not want any kingdom now. I am seeing you. I was looking for broken pieces of glass, but I have found a rare diamond. In your vision, in your love, in your mercy, I have found the fulfillment of all of my desires. Therefore now, my Lord, I am satisfied. Simply in remembering you, chanting your holy name, and serving your lotus feet. By the grace of my Gurudev Narada Muni, I am now in your divine presence. I ask nothing of you. I am content to live in this forest, chanting your names forever." Lord Narayan ordered Dhruva that you must go back to your father's kingdom, and you accept the responsibilities in due course of time. You rule the world, but you do it always in loving devotional service to me. So Dhruva Maharaj went back and he became king. And the dynasty continued. Dhruva was not an ordinary family man. He was living in his palace. And he was conducting all the affairs of the state with great intelligence and care. But everything he did was in consciousness of Krishna. Every single aspect of his life, socially, politically, domestically, it was done in perfect harmony with the instructions of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. And therefore, he became a perfect king. Because a perfect devotee is perfect in whatever he does. A perfect businessman is a person who does his business in love of God. A perfect father or mother is one who conducts their family affairs in love and surrender to God. A perfect architect, a perfect sannyasi, a perfect every field of society is one who offers all of his actions in the loving service of the Lord in consciousness of Krishna. Perfect doesn't mean making lots of money. Perfect doesn't mean gaining great, great power. Perfect means acting in harmony with the all-perfect will of the supreme perfect person, Krishna. So Dhruva Maharaj, by his example, established the principle of pure bhakti in one's duty. This idea, work is worship, was not at all accepted by Dhruva Maharaj. Work is worship only if it is done as an act of surrender to Bhagawan. Otherwise, work is simply a cause of bondage. Even when we are observing high moral principles, at the best, it's the cause of bondage to the sattva-guna, the mode of goodness, which ultimately leads to another birth and death. Perfect work means work that is free of all bondage. Yagyaratat kamanon yatra lokomam kanama bandana. And that is work that is done in Krishna consciousness, in pure consciousness, in bhakti. So Dhruva Maharaja's ancestor, his descendants, followed this principle. Later there was King Prachini Barhishat. And he had many sons named the Prachetas. And he sent his sons, because he was a religious man, that before you could properly do your duties and marry and take the affairs of the state, you have to first purify yourselves and become thoroughly God conscious. So he sent his sons to perform tapasya. Then you come home. Then we will find you wives, and then we will give you our responsibilities. But meanwhile, King Prachini Parishishat, although he was preaching like this to his children, he became very materially attached. But because of his relationship as a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj, the Lord was very merciful to him. It is said that if someone becomes a pure devotee of God, 10 generations before and after are all liberated of that devotee. That is the concession that Krishna gives to one who surrenders to him. This is in the Shastra. Because everyone knows that naturally family members and relatives are dearly loved by a person. And when we surrender to Krishna, Krishna becomes purchased by that humble devotion, and he wants to satisfy that devotee to the ultimate extent, on every level. Not only does he give that person salvation, but just for the peace of mind and for the happiness of that devotee, he gives all relatives for 10 generations past and future liberation. We are speaking about Dhruva. At the end of Dhruva's life, the messengers of Vaikuntha, they came down in a flower airplane to take him back to the spiritual world, the eternally liberated state of loving service to the Lord. And Dhruva said, "My mother, she's the one who initially told me to come to the forest. And it was by her grace that I ultimately met my guru and I had the darshan of Lord Narayan. I cannot go without her." The Vishnu Dutas, they pointed in a distant place in the sky and said, "Do you see what is happening there?" And Dhruva saw that before him, his mother was on a flower airplane being transported to Vaikuntha. So the special mercy of the Lord is upon all those who are near and dear to his surrendered devotee. Of course, the most vibrant example of this was Prahlad. After Prahlad was persecuted and tortured by his demoniac father, Hiranyakashipu, in so many terrible ways, Narasingadeva gave him benediction. "Anything you like, I'll give you." He said, "My lord, I have not come to do business with you. I'm not asking you for anything for myself. I am a devotee. A devotee doesn't ask the Lord for material benefits or even spiritual benefits. A devotee simply wants to serve his beloved. I only want your loving service. But if you insist on giving me something, my father is such a sinful demon. He would kill Brahmins and drink their blood. But I love him. Please give him liberation." And Narasingadeva then said, "Not only is your father liberated, but all your relatives, 10 generations past and future, are liberated because of your surrender." So King Prachini Barhishat, he fell from the path of devotion and he became very materially attached. But at that time, Narada Muni appeared and preached to him very nicely. And King Prachuni Bharisha dedicated his body, his mind, his words, his life in the service of the Lord. But somehow or other, after the Prachetas, shortly after, there were no descendants of Maharaj Uttanapada. So Swayambhu Vamanu, he realized there were no descendants of him, but Priyavrat was still living on the Gandhamadana mountain. So he should be king. But this was a big challenge, because Priyavrat had not even the slightest inclination for these worldly responsibilities. He was just thinking of Krishna. So Swayambhu Vamanu realized that this was happening. So the Supreme Father of everyone within this universe, Lord Brahma, he appeared. Brahma is the guru of Narada. And Brahma is here preaching to Priyavrat that you should not fear performing any duty if it is the will of God. Even if in the discharge of your duty, obviously, to be a king means you have to come off this mountain. You have to take a wife to be your queen. You have to have children who will be the princes and princesses. And you will have to struggle with all of the incredible responsibilities of being the political leader of the whole world. You will have to tax the citizens. You will have to control armies, to subdue the wicked. You will have to uphold laws. But if you do it in Krishna consciousness, according to the will of God, Krishna will protect you. And what was the difference between Narada Muni and Priyavrat? One was a renunciate, one was a householder and a king. There was no difference. They were both performing their prescribed duty in spiritual consciousness. So therefore we should know that this is the most important, essential factor of our life. There is a need for all classes of men in society. There's a need for mothers. You know, in America today, women are being ashamed of being housewives. It is considered something that's old-fashioned, And what do they say? Taboo. Woman should be professional. She should be out aggressively making money, making a big name for herself. And you hire someone to take care of your children. And what is the result? The children are not raised with any love. They're just raised by professionals. And when the children are not nourished with love, they become terribly insecure, unhappy, unsatisfied. Generally, because the husband and wife are both working professionally, they become competitors with one another. And therefore, it's a 68% statistic that within a few years they get divorced. In my own experience, I was born and raised in America. Now I'm 42 years old. When I hear about the families of all my friends and all the people of my neighborhood. My mother and father are the only ones in the whole neighborhood that did not get divorced. Huh? Every single one of my friends, I hear about them, their parents divorced as soon as they got out of high school. They stayed together. Somehow or other, they struggled to stay together till they at least graduated from high school. Then, get out of my life. They were competitors. This is modern society. And it is a fact that when children are insecure, when they are not raised with love, when their parents are not nourishing them with that type of kindness, we're talking from a social point of view, they generally take to drugs or take to alcohol or get in bad association and become criminals or juvenile delinquents. Because in the Western world, people feel there's no need for loving mothers. There's a need for big name, profession, and lots of money. And the whole society suffers hellish consequences. There's a need for mothers. There's a need for fathers. But Rishabhdev explains that one has no right to be a mother, a father, a king, a teacher, unless one, by his example or by her words, can lead their dependent into the spiritual consciousness where there is no more birth and death. According to the Vedic scriptures and according to the true culture of India, the most important responsibility of mother and father is that this child will never take birth again in the material world. To give clothes, to give food, to give a nice house, these things are of superficial importance. But the essential importance is to raise that child in such a state of devotional consciousness that that child will never have to suffer death again. That child will find eternal joy and eternal love in this life and forevermore. There was a great need for such grihasthas. And within our society, there's also needs for doctors, for lawyers, for architects, for politicians, for farmers. There's also an essential, urgent need for sannyasis and brahmacharis. Every one of these occupations is absolutely required for the proper progress of society. Not long ago, I was giving a lecture at a college for accountants. What is the name of that college? It's in Andheri. Mahaprabhu. It's a big college in Andheri, remember? So I was giving lecture. I was speaking about Sanatan Dharma. And what? Very angry. He stood up when it was time for questions and answers, and he very expertly insulted me. And of course, devotees, they actually like to be insulted. We feel that we're getting Krishna's special mercy when someone insults us. It helps to make us humble. But at the same time, we have to defend the truth. So he said that everything you're saying is all nonsense. I reject it. He said, because what if everyone in the world becomes like you, a sannyasi? Who's going to grow food? Who's going to heal the sick? Who's going to coordinate the society? I said, are you done? He said, yes. I said, all right. My question to you is, what if everyone in the world becomes like you, a chartered accountant? Who's going to grow the food? Who's going to heal the sick? Everyone will be unemployed because there'll be nobody to account for. There's a need for chartered accountants. There's a need for bankers. There's a need for sailors. There's a need for military people. There's a need for sannyasis. Without sannyasis going from home to remind people of the essential principles of spiritual life, according to the Shastra, there's no hope for anyone else. So Varnashram Dharma was created by Krishna. It shows how every aspect of society is necessary, every occupation. But the Varnashram Dharma teaches how everyone could perform their duties in pure spiritual consciousness. So that in the execution of our duties, we are elevated to higher platforms of devotion. So Maharaj Priyavrat, with this true understanding of Sanatana Dharma, he accepted the position of king and how he ruled the citizens. He was like guru. Everyone would follow in his footsteps. Krishna says in Gita, yad yad acharati sreshthas tad tad evetaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokasthat anuvartate. That whatever great people do, the common men follow. It is natural. Today's society, who we consider to be great, is so unfortunate. In the Vedic culture, the great people were the great saints, the Rajarishis, the saintly kings, the great prophets, the great sadhus, people like Bhaktivinod Thakur. We were discussing at your house once. He was a magistrate, but he was such a devotee of God. He was leading thousands, millions of people on the path of bhakti. Although he was the most effective magistrate in the British government. These are people that traditionally in India were glorified and put in high positions for people to follow. But today, movie stars, movie actors, movie actresses, what is the quality of their morality? What is their quality of their spiritual consciousness? Most of them are utterly miserable people. Musicians. What do they sing about? What do they do? What is their private life? What are they giving to people? Athletes. These are the big heroes of today's society. Television stars, movie stars, athletes, musicians. Everyone wants to meet them. They're famous. Whatever they do, whatever they say is in the newspapers and in the magazines. And mostly we read about their scandals. When we go down that one road from our temple, there's one billboard which just talks about all, read this magazine and you'll read this scandal about this movie actress and this scandal about this movie star. And obviously people are spending their rupees to buy these magazines. They actually idolize these people who are constantly involved in scandals. This is our society. What great men do, common people follow. And therefore the common people, they consider it very much fashionable to be involved in scandals, to engage in immoral activities. One of the greatest movie stars of American history. In every movie, he had a cigarette hanging from his mouth, like this. And because everyone was going to see him, everyone was thinking, he looked so fashionable with this cigarette in his mouth. And the women were thinking, that cigarette hanging from his mouth is very sexy. So therefore, everyone started smoking cigarettes. Millions and millions and millions of people started smoking cigarettes because he was in the movies with cigarettes. Because he was a leader. They idolized such a person. And a few years later, this person died a miserable death from mouth cancer because of smoking cigarettes. And now, the next generation, there are millions of his followers dying of cancer of the lungs, cancer of the mouth, cancer of the throats. Bhagavatam says, when the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the ditch together. And our society is becoming the blind leading the blind. What the society needs is pure devotees as leaders. And in a family, the mother and the father are leaders of their children. If they are great and sincere devotees, then the children will naturally become great and sincere devotees. Every little person has such a powerful influence on the whole world if they simply live in harmony with the will of God, if they simply surrender to the will of God. Because whoever surrenders to the will of God, they become endowed with the infinite power of God. Our own Guru Maharaj, he was from Calcutta. I think many of you are from Calcutta. Huh? He was a businessman in Calcutta. But from his very birth, his father taught him the principles of pure devotion to the Lord. And he was a struggling businessman, somewhat successful. But on his Guru Maharaj's order and by his father's kind wishes. Actually, when Gurudev was a little child, his father, Gaur Mohan Day, set such an example for him to follow. Children are so impressionable. What they see their parents do, that molds their whole life. When he was a little child, his father, every night in Calcutta, they would not have dinner until first they fed at least 5 sadhus in their home. This was the discipline. Father would invite 5 sadhus, and father with his own hands would serve those sadhus, the mother with her own hands would serve the sadhus. And after they were fully satisfied eating nice prasad of Krishna, the father would say, please give me one blessing, that my son be a great devotee of Radharani. And little Prabhupada, Abhay Charan, would see this every night. He would see his father and mother worshipping the deity of Radha Govinda. So he said, I want deities too. And he started worshipping Radha Govinda. He would go out and he would go to the vendors on the street and beg, give me kichori so I can offer to Radha Govinda. And he would beg. And he would never eat. He would just offer it to Radha Govinda. So he had this training. He had this influence from his birth. But because, although later on when he retired, when his children grew up and he retired from his worldly responsibilities, he was so much devoted to the instruction of his spiritual master, his spiritual master told him that everyone, as far as their capacity, should spread this message of Krishna all over the world. So here was one Bengali man, and by his influence, he spread the message of Sanatana Dharma to every continent on the planet. Millions and millions and millions of people have heard the message of Gita and are chanting the holy name of Krishna. So we should not think that our example does not have a very, very powerful influence on our loving, our loved near and dear ones, and factually on the whole world. So my humble request to all of you little children, do well in your studies, serve your parents nicely, but most of all know that your eternal father is Krishna. And to chant his names, to serve him, and to love him will be the fulfillment of all of your desires. Prahlad Maharaj explained from the very earliest stages of childhood, this is the time that Krishna consciousness should be cultivated. And at every stage of our life, we should know that this is our real, eternal duty. The duties of this world are temporary. They have a beginning and an end. But our duty to God is eternal. We must harmonize them together. We should not neglect one, but we should also not neglect the other. This is what Bhagavad Gita teaches. Arjuna, you are a family man and a warrior. Do your service, but do it for me. If you neglect your spiritual duty, but you perform your worldly duties, then you are in the category of Duryodhana. He was very carefully doing his worldly duties. Perfect life means to harmonize every aspect of our life in devotion to Krishna, in remembrance of Krishna. Because ultimately, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam cha jachyante kalevaram, ultimately at the time of death, what we remember is what we will attain. If we remember Krishna at the time of death, we will attain our eternal destination of Krishna. That is the ultimate responsibility of every human being, to remember Krishna in life and at death. And how to remember Krishna? It is not difficult. How to harmonize every aspect of our life with Krishna? It is quite simple. The first thing is association, sadhu sangha, regular association with sadhus, to hear from them, to serve them. This gives us a spiritual base and a direction. It creates a sanctity in our life. It gives us spiritual strength. And then we must live according to the highest ideals of morality. And we must regularly bathe our consciousness with the beautiful sound vibration of the holy name of God. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare, we are literally bathing our consciousness, washing away all the illusions, all the misconceptions, all the bad qualities. And when the heart, when the mind is clean, Krishna the absolute joy and ecstasy of pure bhakti manifests. It is our eternal nature. Simply by living a moral life, associating with sadhus, and chanting the name of God, we become spiritualized. And with that spiritual force, it becomes natural to harmonize every aspect of our duty and responsibility in the loving service of Sri Krishna. That is the first and foremost goal of this human form of life. Thank you very much.